This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Shanning and Roshan. Now, in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with World Bank economist Richard Record for his thoughts on Malaysia's economic policy direction. But in the meantime, let's talk about Permodalan Nasional Berhad, or PNB. Now, we're running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, considering the performance of the KLCI this year, is PNB's income distribution satisfactory? So we've had about 20 votes so far. 50% have said no, it's not satisfactory. 40% have said yes. A remaining 10 or so percent says it doesn't concern me. Continue to let us know what you think. Now, PNB has announced a 5.5 sen per unit distribution for Amanah Saham Bumi Putra unit holders for the year ending the 31st of December 2019. So this consists of a 5 sen distribution and a 0.5 sen bonus.
Yeah, the total payout of that will equal 9 billion ringgit, benefiting about 10 million unit holders and accounts for 167 billion units held. Another PNB fund, Amanah Saham National ASN, announced an income distribution of 2.75 cent per unit. Now, ASN is a variable price fund, so this distribution reflects a dividend yield of about 4.4% based on the net asset value of the fund, but this was as of December 16th, I think that was Monday. The total payout of 49 million ringgit will benefit more than 1.22 million unit holders, accounting for 1.8 billion units in the fund.
Now, this year's income distribution is the lowest since 1990 when it was first launched. It's lower than in 2018 where it was 7 cent per unit, comprising 6.5 cent distribution and 0.5 sen for bonus. Now, PNB Chairman Tan Sri Zeti Aziz said that the unit holders should be aware that the funds have good years and challenging ones. She said that ASB managed to deliver high returns compared to other similar investments like fixed deposits if benchmarked against the Maybank, for example. Maybank's 12-month fixed deposit for 2019, ASB outperforms it by 2.4%. Now, relative to the FBM KLCI one-year price return as at December 16, ASB then outperformed the index by 12.7%.
Yeah, so it's interesting because Tan Sri Zeti has basically had to defend this income distribution, because as we saw, it was on the front page of the Star. It's been in the news quite a lot over these past few days because a lot of people are angry that it isn't higher. And she's cited mitigating factors like market volatility due to the US-China trade war, the slowdown in global trade, as well as the fact that our KLCI hasn't been doing very well. You know, we're still down nearly 8% on a year-to-date basis. So this reflects weaker earnings as well from companies in PNB's stable.
Well, the index is actually, well, except for yesterday's little nice bounce, on a year-to-date basis, the index is down actually 5.41%. But she also highlighted that the KLCI has been on a declining trend, not just for this year, but for the last 4 out of 5 years. And because of the way PNB does manage its money, it doesn't have as much foreign exposure or foreign diversification. Perhaps this explains the weaker performance this year. So she has said that this is something that PNB will be doing. So PNB has announced a target of boosting foreign investments to 30% by 2022, similar to actually what EPF already does now.
So currently it stands at 8%. So taking that into consideration, it's actually quite remarkable that despite the KLCI's lackluster performance, that PNB has done well, considering the fact that the benchmark's down 5% yesterday. Mm-hmm. Without the 1.4% boost yesterday, it was down 7%. So that is something to keep in mind when analysing these results.
Yeah, but the issue about managing such big funds is that for you to correct fund performance is not going to be so easy, and diversifying overseas in these current markets when everything is at all-time highs does put pressure on the PNB investment team. They have hired a new person in, a new group CEO, Jalil Rashid, and he's looking to increase its geographical exposure. And this is going to be through PE firms, which is private equity. So he said they're drawing up a comprehensive strategy for 2020, and they're looking at intensifying their diversification process.
Yeah, so they're also saying that they're going to be strengthening risk management as well as organizational and institutional investment. And they're also going to be undertaking an assessment of the impact of their investments, including taking into account ESG aspects. And that's quite interesting because we have seen a rise in ESG investing over the past 1 or 2 years, because a lot of people, particularly as we see generational change and the millennial generation, Gen Ys, coming into the workforce and into the investment landscape, these are things that they tend to prioritize more highly than previous generations.
Even EPF has come up with their own ESG statements, so it's not something new. But honestly, when I look at the comprehensive strategy for 2020, a lot of what they want to do is stuff as things that they perhaps should have done earlier. Things like diversification overseas, having a risk management strategy, things that every fund, I repeat, every asset management fund, insurance fund should already put into practice, right? Because when you're dealing with big sums of money, you have to practice these things, right?
I mean, even if you're dealing with, as long as you're dealing with other people's money, you should be practicing a comprehensive strategy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because you have a fiduciary duty to all your unit holders to maximize returns, right? So diversification is definitely one way of going about it, and diversifying not just within the Malaysian market, within the different asset classes, but also looking overseas, and then when you're overseas at the different asset classes also, because this is about long-term performance, right? And maintaining this long-term performance. So putting all your eggs into one basket doesn't help.
Yeah, can you imagine if you were more invested overseas? Look at how well overseas markets have done. The Dow Jones is, all the US markets at all-time highs, all the rest of the Asian region except for Hong Kong, I guess, has in double digits, or were in double digits. And it just goes to show that if we had more foreign exposure to our investments, we would have done better.
Yeah, but it cannot just be equities, right? So you're looking at every asset class. So you're looking at fixed income, you're looking at equities. You also need to look at property, because sometimes you can enjoy some stable yield from rental income. And also private equity, it does make some sense. I mean, there is a sense that it will have a higher level of risk, but there is that potential of return. So a combination of assets and a combination of jobs, geographical investments is probably the way to go for a fund as large as PNB.
Well, do continue to let us know what you think about PNB's performance. That's because we're running that poll on our Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. We've had about 30 votes so far. Do give us your thoughts. Now, the other thing that's making the local headlines this morning and was the front page of the New Straits Times is the KL Summit, because the Kuala Lumpur Summit of 2019, that kicked off yesterday. And here in Malaysia, we're playing hosts to leaders from Indonesia, Turkey, Iran, Qatar, as well as Uzbekistan. Now, the KL Summit is an NGO initiative supported by the Malaysian government, and this is its fifth edition. It's going to be running until Saturday.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani arrived on Tuesday, while Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan arrived yesterday. Tun Dr. Mahathir said during the KL Summit is aimed at improving the lives of Muslims, overcoming Islamophobia, and addressing the shortcomings in the Muslim world that they're currently facing. And I think the issues in India currently highlight this more than ever at this present point.
But what's interesting is who's not here, right? Because at this juncture, notably absent are the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, and the Saudi Arabian ruler, King Salman. In fact, Dr. Mahathir held a video conference with King Salman on Tuesday, and Tun Mahathir revealed that King Salman shared his reasons for not being able to attend the KL Summit 2019. One of the things is Saudi Arabia feared that the KL Summit was meant to replace the Organization of Islamic Conference, or OIC, as a platform to discuss Muslim issues, and King Salman disagreed with that. Dr. Tun Mahathir explained to him that this was not the case. Similarly, Imran Khan had also called Dr. Mahathir to express his regrets for not able to attend the events.
So in other words, Saudi Arabia said, your party is not better than my party, so I'm not going to come to your party.
Well, he said no. King Salman was trying to be polite about it.
So this is, the Prime Minister's office also did clarify in a statement that the KL Summit is not intended to replace the OIC, and it clarified that only specific nations and national leaders were chosen in order to find a new approach to Muslim issues. issue. So if successful, then it would be presented to the larger Islamic grouping and bigger Muslim nations in order to evaluate whether or not these initiatives should be pursued on a larger scale. Now, the question, though, is whether or not this summit can be effective without the presence of leaders from major Muslim nations like Saudi Arabia.
So that begs the question now, why the KL summit, right? Because if we already have the OIC, why do you need the KL summit? Unless Tun Dr. Mahathir wanted to invite select leaders to this party of his and to not clash with the mandate of the OIC.
Well, the other thing is, while they're here, let's hope they talk about the hot-button issues affecting Muslim communities in the world, like the Uyghurs in China and the Muslims in India, because these things are, you know, grabbing headlines and they are real concerns.
Yeah, and I guess at the end of the day, the KL summit could be useful as a track to forum. Now, we do see those at other international organizations around the world. But I just like to highlight the theme of the summit, which is the role of development in achieving national sovereignty. And for me, that was a little bit of a flag, just because we're still talking about national sovereignty rather than regional integration. And it just goes to show where the world is, the direction that the world is shifting to in 2020. But right now, we're heading into the 7:30 news, and after that, a more fascinating discussion for you. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.